Hello to all listeners, and welcome to our podcast episode on how societal actors organize to respond to the climate crisis we are facing. Today, we're joined by Anni Bokkala, one of the founders of Operati Arctis, a climate strategy agency led by young professionals with an activist mindset. Their mission is to update society's climate strategies by integrating research and development of climate interventions with a focus on Arctic environments. Hi, Anni, and welcome. Before we dive in, could you briefly introduce yourself and what a climate strategy agency does?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. So I'm one of our strategists in the climate strategy agency. So it's in our case, climate strategy agency means that we are looking at kind of the big picture of what our society's climate responses are. And trying to update those to really respond to the current climate situation, which has been, you know, we have a lot of new information on where we're actually going with ecosystems and with, you know, with possible like increasing in the speed of global warming as well. So we have a lot of new research coming in about those things. So we're trying to update in a very wide kind of scale the way in which we respond to that changing environment.
Right, and from what I've heard, the work of Operati Arctis specifically revolves around climate interventions. Is this right?
Yes. Yeah. So climate interventions, people usually talk about geoengineering. So that's purposefully doing stuff to the climate in a very, very like layman's terms. So sometimes geoengineering can mean also carbon dioxide removal, so carbon sequestration. But what we're focusing on is in climate intervention specifically. So that kind of falls under the category of geoengineering usually. But climate interventions, what we mean by them is these intervenings in the climate system. So we're not trying to sequestrate carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, which is also important. It's part of the kind of wide scale of solutions. But what we are not talking about enough is ways in which we might be able to cool down the Earth in a fast way. So solar radiation management is one of those techniques. And there are it's a category of different techniques. And then the other can be seen as being these targeted climate interventions. So in ways in which we could support glaciers from melting as fast as they are, for example.
Yeah, I guess our next question would have been, tell us a little bit about what Operati Arctis does, but I think you covered it in some sort already. So moving on to the background a little bit about both you and the Operati Arctis. In our course, we have been discussing ways of dealing with the complexity of the sustainability issues and specifically in an organizational context.
Yeah.
So we would love to hear more and learn about the early days of the organizational story of Operati Arctis. So first of all, like, how did you even become involved in climate activism?
Yeah, so for me, it started with Extinction Rebellion, so Elokapina. We were blocking streets, Mannerheimintie. I have friends there, and I was supposed to bring them food, and then I just stayed there, and I stayed for a night, and then I stayed and I slept in the tents, and so on, and then did civil disobedience in Elokapina, and then I got to know these friends from that activism, and together with this friend group, we started Operati Arctis. So we had this major mobilization success in 21, the fall 21. So that was Syyskapina, and we had 1,000 protesters out on Mannerheimintie. And after that, we were kind of like, okay, like we need to take a bit of a strategic break, like take a step back, recover from what went down, and think about what we're going to do next. And we looked at climate science, tried to update our understanding of like where are we actually with the state of our ecosystems and what's happening on like the atmosphere scale. And very quickly we realized that there are a lot of, for example, Earth system tipping points that we're already might be crossing, even if we stay in the Paris Agreement goals, so 1.5 to 2 degrees of warming. And we realized that, for example, the West Antarctic ice sheet is most probably going to collapse without some additional techniques. So in that kind of activist mindset that we have, we're like, okay, there are some things that we might not be able to do anything about with only carbon sequestration and emission cuts. But we weren't, you know, we weren't ready to accept those damages. So we were like, okay, we need to look at some additional things. And that's what led us to geoengineering and climate interventions. And now we have been collaborating with different scientific departments. We have a lot of friends from academia now who are like actually working on those techniques. And then, so that's kind of one part of the thing. We're working together with people who are actually developing those things, researching them, researching also the like societal level questions that we have regarding those techniques, and then trying to work with our government and work in like in different national and international circles where we try to like get this message through that we need to update our climate strategies.
It's so impressive, like starting from basically like finding like-minded people and just full-on operation. It's very impressive. And I think also, like as we understand it, Operaatio Arktis operates in quite a complex intersection of both like activism, innovation, research, and politics. Mm-hmm. So our question would be like, is it hard to define yourself and your mission as an organization with this like multidisciplinary framework, or do you find it easier to?
I think more and more we're becoming this like expert organization. So we now we have like certain like ministries, for example, like asking for our advice on like certain things, because we have such a novel kind of approach to these questions. We also have some knowledge that maybe other more like traditional organization might not have. Of course, that's controversial to some people, but I feel like in general, people are very ready to have some like fresh new ideas from the climate space, and to kind of, because what we are is very much like solution based, and I think that's something that's very interesting to people. And but we also have that activist mindset from our like maybe younger days. We're still pretty young, all of us. But yeah, I think it's much more an advantage and a kind of richness in what we do is that we come from like a very different kind of landscape, I feel like.
Yeah. And going on what you said also, like, and what we read and have heard about is that you are now also receiving a significant grant from the Kone Foundation, which is very impressive, and also have this upcoming project that involves publishing an article in collaboration with James Hansen.
Yeah, actually, the article came out 2 or 3 weeks ago. So we were very, very happy to get in touch with James Hansen, who is one of the kind of pioneers of modern climate science. And he was the guy who was in Congress of the United States, stating that climate change is happening in the 80s. A very, very cool guy. And we had the possibility to meet him. And I had given this like talk in one of our events, and he was like very like inspired by that. So now we are co-writers in his like recent publication, which is like, if you want to be shocked by how bad the climate situation is, please give it a read. But also what's interesting is that James Hansen is this like very OG climate guy, like very much like, you know, has been there from the get-go. And he now is speaking for the research and development of solar radiation management.
Yeah.
Solutions.
I guess for the listeners, like he's a former climate research director of NASA.
Yeah.
Which is like also telling how far you have come, like as an organization.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So of course we also want you to congratulate you.
Thanks.
On this.
Thanks.
And both your grant and the recognition and the momentum that the organization is getting. But going on from that, we also want to know, like, has it always been smooth sailing for the organization? Or do you have any, like, what's your biggest challenge you have had to face? Or maybe you're still facing, like, bigger challenges with the whole?
I think, for me, I can speak on my behalf, I guess. So I'm doing my master's in gender studies. So I have absolutely no prior experience on climate science. So I've kind of, through activism and through kind of being like, okay, I need to focus on the climate. Like I went through the whole thing, like, why am I even focusing on my career? Why am I building a career to, you know, graduate as a so-and-so, like a gender studies person? Like, what's the world gonna even look like if we cross all these tipping points, if we go beyond like 4 degrees of warming? And through this like existential thing, like, okay, I need to put these things on hold, and I need to really put a lot of my time into trying to, you know, solve this issue. And that meant that I have to become some sort of professional or some sort of like, you know, gain this knowledge through kind of not academia, because I never went to study like natural sciences, and that's not like a comfort zone for me at all. So that's definitely been one of the things, kind of finding my space in the discussion as a gender studies student, as someone who has this very like humanities based touch on this issue. But at the same time, I feel like that's been a major like advantage in this whole discussion, because I feel like the conversation is very much like held by these, or, you know, that usually the loudest voices in like climate engineering has traditionally been like old white men in engineering kind of fields, and that has also like meant that, you know, there isn't like, especially like left-leaning people, like activism-leaning people, humanities-leaning people don't have a like an ownership of this discussion at all. And like if we're at some point in the next, I don't know, 100 years going to be doing some sort of stratospheric aerosol injection, like putting up like intentionally putting more aerosols in our like upper stratosphere, like that is very much a global issue, and it's very much that touches every one of us, like regardless of our like expertise on climate science. So what I've felt like is through some trial and error, I've found my place in the discussion with the focus that I have, and being able to like use my like I guess God-given like natural maybe like skills that I have, and being able to like offer them to this work that I feel like is important today.
Would you say this is also one of the most gratifying moments of your work then? Because that was going to be my next question. Like, okay, so what are the challenges and what's been most gratifying? But I guess you touched upon like both gratifying and like challenges.
I'm becoming like a like positive vibes only person, like day by day. This is very troubling. I don't sound like an activist. I mean that's a huge thing. I mean, getting recognition, getting invited to places. I mean, I'm a human. That's what makes you kind of thrive. And I guess that's a message that I have for everyone who are thinking like, what should I do? And like, I think there's this idea that climate activism or anything sort of connected to like the climate or sustainability, I guess we're in like a stagnant point with these discussions. Like Greta Thunberg has like graduated, and we're like Brat Summer. The climate issue is not trending at all. Like, there's no interest in it. And I feel like that compared to, like, the momentum that we had on, like, the IPCC report of 2017, where it was like, oh, my God, I'm going to ditch, like, plastic straws. And we had this feeling that we can do something. And there was, like, all these big marches in Helsinki, for example. And I feel like a lot of people have this idea now, because things are getting worse and worse and worse, and we're like, oh my god, like this seems impossible to solve. Like we're getting to like, oh, maybe I should just like enjoy life and party and until the world ends. And I completely get that. I have those moments. I go out and party. I like that's an important part of life. At the same time, I like there are, you can do this work, you can do sustainability, you can do climate work in a way that is very gratifying to you, and you can do it in a way that really speaks to your like passion and like drive to get recognition. And like I feel like those, that energy that a lot of people connect with, like entrepreneurship or like starting building a startup and like being in that hybris of like, I can do stuff, like this is the most incredible thing, like you can totally get those things out of things that are also like morally very much like important this like in this day and age.
Right. Moving on to climate interventions, roughly a year ago you held a speech at the Arctic Momentum where you mentioned everything from brightening marine clouds with sea salt, marine biomass regeneration, and seabed anchored curtains. These are all examples of technologies that can be harnessed as ways of climate repair, for example, in the form of removing carbon from the atmosphere. Generally, in what stages of development are some of these technologies? Do you work with technologies only in a certain stage of development, or is everyone welcome?
So right now, because we're very much focused on like the political change, I guess, when it comes to like what kind of research we should be doing, we tend to focus on technologies that that have some sort of like history of like, okay, there's a lot of research papers on them. For example, stratospheric aerosol injection is something that has been, it's definitely not research enough, but that's the one climate intervention that people usually know about. So there's like roughly 1,000 like papers about SAI, so stratospheric aerosol injection, but there are a lot of knowledge gaps. So what we're trying to, we're in some ways trying to see what kind of knowledge gaps we have in regards to those things. And it, like obviously if I meet a guy on the street and he's like, oh, I have this great idea of like putting this and this there and there, and this is like this new technology, like maybe that's not the phase where we're like, okay, I'm gonna bring this to like our environmental like minister and like da da da. But yes, SRM is something that we're focusing on, just because it's like it's more scalable. If you look at SII, for example, that might be very scalable. And then the other thing you mentioned, the marine cloud brightening, that's something that we have field tests going on. Or not right now, but there has been field tests, at least two field tests going on in Australia to protect coral reefs, and then in San Francisco last year there was field trials on that as well. But there needs to be a lot more done ethically, done by, you know, talking to local people, because that has been an issue before, not talking to local communities and local people. So there's been like this, like, oh my god, what are you doing? Like, you're engineering our climate, like, what's going on? So there needs to be a lot of like discussion, public discussion on those things as well. And the other thing which I would like to point out, because that's like a very, you can be proud as a Finn, because Lapland University, they have this research project with John Moore, who was a very good friend of ours, and they're trying to build these, like, we're trying to look see if it would be possible to anchor this like seabed curtains to protect ice sheets, so that they wouldn't collapse and melt as fast.
That sounds very interesting. Inside promoting this industry and innovation, there's a usual association with growth-driven economic models, mm-hmm. whereas often we see that in climate action, it's more focused on like degrowth. Yep. So what is your personal take on growth and degrowth? Where does Operatio Artis situate itself?
Well, I would like to answer this in a sort of curveball way. I'm not trying to escape the question, but I would like to frame it in a different way, which is that despite the fact that we might have an amazing, you know, economical break. Like our economic system, our societal, we're going to have this great like systemic change, and where everything's going to be more sustainable, like whatever that is, whether it be some sort of degrowth model, whether it be like green capitalism, you can have a lot of opinions on that. It might even be like, even if it's like a complete communist takeover, we would still probably need these techniques. So that's kind of why I feel like it's important to bring that's an important piece to bring into the conversation. It's like no matter what you think about those things, we're gonna probably need these techniques.
So maybe the question about growth and degrowth isn't really like the main issue, or it's the activities that you do that actually like help us preserve the complete climate.
Yeah, no, definitely like degrowth, huge issues in like systemic change in like climate justice, all these things, not denying that in any sense. But I guess a lot of people might feel like it's just like, I don't know, it's a given that you have to kind of like put yourself out there to be like, I am for degrowth. Yes, there's spaces where that's needed, and also I feel like we need this fresh outlook also, and the fact that these techniques are not, I mean, I would like to see a world, and that's what I'm working towards. I want to work towards a world where these techniques, because they are being developed as we speak. Like if Operatio Artis, like we close our doors and we, you know, go on a infinite holiday, people are still going to build these machines. They're still going to like try to make this happen. And when climate impacts become worse over time, like the interest towards these techniques will only grow. So I really want to work for a world where these techniques are not used as a silver bullet, and they're not used to uphold a status quo, like a economic status quo. So yes, that's an important part of the question as well.
So we kind of escaped the question, but still not. We still got an opinion. Perfect. No, but for our next subject, as you were talking about in one of the previous questions, you talked about we also need to have communication with the people. We wanted to talk more about the indigenous engagement that Operatio Artis is involved in, but more on a like general level. We know you have this collaboration with the peoples of Sami, and you had a Sharing Sami Experience event in New York and everything, and I know it's not like your specific field in or like area of special what should I call it,
expertise,
but still like only touching maybe upon like what does this involving the people more in general mean to Operatio Artis, like how do you see the collaboration with the people of the different
so we just see that there's no way that this thing should happen on the backs of like indigenous peoples, people on the climate front lines as well. I think that's there's two demographics that are usually like put aside in climate discussions, and a lot of these techniques, we're called Operatio Artis, so it deals with the Arctic area, which is mainly, like, if we think about Finland, that's mainly Sami land. So for us, it was really like a question of, oh shit, like we need to get comfortable with the fact that we are white climate activists from Helsinki. Like, most of us are from Helsinki, I should put it out there, not all of us. But me, for example, like, I might go into like this. I was at the COP 20. Well, what was the number? 27 or 28? That was in Dubai, the year before last. And I got introduced as a speaker as an Arctic youth, like person. I'm like, from Helsinki, like that, not an Arctic young person. So I think it's a work of decentering our experience and bring different voices into the, and even if we talk about the research in itself, like researching climate interventions, there's a lot of like traditional indigenous knowledge that hasn't been traditionally included in like engineering research, for example, and research in general in Western history. So that's one big part of it. And also, like, if you want to do experiments on Sami land, just like please fucking ask the local people if that's okay. Like have a discussion with them. There's this also an example of Harvard trying to do this ScopeX experiment in Sweden's part of Sami land, in Kiruna, and they did not ask. I believe they did not ask the consent of the state of Sweden, and they didn't ask informed consent of the indigenous peoples there. So of course it was shut down. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, fortunately we have organizations, we have people who speak for all of this research being done with, you know, free, prior and informed consent. So even if you think, like, as an engineer, like, how am I going to do this experiment? Like, luckily I can say that you most probably won't be going to do it. You won't be able to do it if you don't, engage with these peoples. And what I would like to add, if there's time for that, is that I think in indigenous engagement, talking as a white person is like one of the most important things, is that you come into this discussion with indigenous representatives, and you have to come into that conversation being willing to change and willing to be changed by that that discussion and by that engagement. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I've learned so far doing this work.
Amazing. I think it's perfect that we had time to discuss this as well, because I think it's like such a big part still of your organization's work,
yeah,
to like have this indigenous engagement and like colleagues, you have Sami colleagues,
yeah,
I understand,
yeah.
And it's a very big part of your work, especially like you said, like even in the name, Arctic,
yeah,
it's the Arctic environment, but obviously the people as well.
Exactly, yeah.
But just to wrap up now, we would like to ask you some concluding questions, wrap-up questions, if you will. So looking ahead, first of all, what's next for Operatio Arctis? What's the next big step?
So right now we're trying to include tipping point risk management into Finnish climate strategies. Very shortly answered. That's
perfect.
What we're working on right now.
And then would you have any final advice for any of us or any of our classmates, how we can incorporate like just an eco-conscious mindset to our future studies and work?
I think... that's hard. You know, it's not very nice to say, you know, read climate science. But I would suggest kind of, if I think about this, like, what state we are in, and like the public discussions on climate change, and how kind of, I feel like, cynical we're starting to get, which is very understandable. I think being okay with the fact that I'm experiencing these cynical feelings, and I would just like to make money and live a very happy and cozy life. Making space for those feelings, they're very much valid. Like, we have been robbed of our, like, the future that we were promised when we were growing up. Like, that's really fucking sad and horrible. Don't know if I can curse in this. And then, you know, try to let yourself care. Try to, you know, you won't break from caring. Like, you can survive it. You can survive caring about ecosystems, and you can survive, you know, putting your heart out there and actually, you know, starting to care about the world and where we're going.
And that's actually very good advice. I think we can all, like, take that with us, and it's not a really hard thing to do either, to just allow yourself to care. So basically, thank you so much, Annie.
Thank you.
This is all we have time for today. So thank you for your insights. And if our listeners want to learn more about you and your operation and maybe support Operatio Arctis, where can they find more information?
I would recommend going to our Instagram page at Operatio Arctis.
Perfect. And with that, we would like to wrap up today's episode and thank all of our listeners as well. And thank you, Annie.
Thank you.